This is a dark moment for America.
I wonder why that is, buddy. And who we have to thank for it, pal.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, no.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Not to mention elsewhere in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains, KKRN, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso and Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet to the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow. Says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another edition of the Bradcast. Let's start with a quote. Quote, I think it's worth it to have a cost of, unfortunately, some gun deaths every single year so that we can have the Second Amendment to protect our God-given rights. That is a prudent deal. It is rational. I cited that quote at bradblog.com when I posted yesterday's Bradcast there after scrambling to cover the breaking news at the time of the killing of Charlie Kirk in Utah. That is a quote from Charlie Kirk in 2023 regarding the necessary costs of gun violence, saying that it is unfortunately, quote, worth the cost, but it is prudent. It is rational. I suspect Charlie Kirk's family, he was married with two young children, may feel differently about that today, but of course, I'm just speculating. There's a whole lot of stuff that the Trump administration would prefer that we did not discuss on today's show. They are likely very happy to have political violence to talk about, at least as long as they can blame the left for it. Even as, while we go to air today, nobody actually knows who's to blame for what happened in Utah on Wednesday. But we'll get to that in a moment. Also, a little bit later, Green News Report, if there's time, with Desi Doyen. How are you?
Hello. There should be time. There will be time.
We'll see. In the meantime, I suspect the administration would prefer that we talk about that political violence, rather than, for example, the fact that the Epstein files are now just one single signature away from a vote being forced for their complete unredacted release in the U.S. House following the special election for a U.S. House seat on Tuesday in Virginia, where the Democrat trounced the Republican by 50 points. That Democrat, James Walkinshaw, will become the 213th Democrat to sign on to the discharge petition. Along with the four Republicans who have signed on, that means 217 of the 218 needed signatures to release to vote on releasing those files are already in place, with another U.S. House special election, by the way, coming in a very Democratic district in Arizona later this month. And they certainly would prefer that we do not note new data out on Thursday regarding how the U.S. economy continues its slow collapse under the weight of Donald Trump's terrible management of it. Inflation rose again last month as the price of gas, groceries, airfares all jumped, while new data showed applications for unemployment aid soared, as described by AP today. Consumer prices increased 2.9% in August from a year earlier. The Labor Department said on Thursday that that was up from 2.7% the previous month, and it was the biggest jump since Trump took office back in January. A separate government report on Thursday showed that weekly applications for unemployment aid jumped to 263,000. That's an increase of 27,000 in a single month, the highest jump in nearly 4 years after what happened then. Oh, yeah, the last time that Donald Trump was in office.
Funny how that works.
Recent reports have also showed that hiring has weakened dramatically this year. All of that after Donald Trump fired the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics at the beginning of the last month because he didn't like the numbers that the BLS reported in July. I suspect he does not like today's numbers any better. Who he'll fire next for it remains to be seen. Worse, shoppers have yet to feel the biggest of the stings in the that economists have been predicting, as many retailers ordered goods ahead of the tariffs. But Walmart and other big chains are warning that cost increases as they replenish their inventories will be happening with the full impact of tariffs in effect. All of the latest data raises the specter of something called stagflation, which I suspect you'll be hearing quite a bit about in the months ahead. It last bedeviled the U.S. economy and U.S. President Jimmy Carter back in the 1970s. The term stagflation refers to a period of slower economic growth and higher unemployment, along with rising inflation. It's unusual to happen because a weak economy typically keeps inflation in check, but not, of course, when you have a president willy-nilly adding border taxes, known as tariffs, to pretty much every product on the market. So jobs are going away, the economy, growth in the economy is slowing down, and inflation is going up at the same time. That is stagflation. That scenario could now create a problem for the Fed, which has been expected to lower interest rates beginning in September this month after months of pressure from Trump to do so. Yet, while doing so might shore up hiring, it could also spark additional inflation. So it's a bit of a dilemma now for the Fed. Typically, the Fed would cut its key rate when employment rises in order to spur more spending and growth. I should say when unemployment rises to spur more growth, yet it would do the opposite and raise rates, or at least keep them unchanged, in the face of rising inflation, which, by the way, is what we also have at the same time. We'll see what happens when the Fed board meets next week, I think. But this is the sort of mess that happens when you have a president who knows nothing about the economy. A man who bankrupted a casino that he owned, after all, for Christ's sakes, being falsely revered as some sort of an economic genius. He is decidedly not. Again, Trump is really hoping that you don't notice those terrible numbers out today from the government, underscoring Trump's ridiculous economic policies and the complete predictable failure of his economic policies in the bargain. And yet, we do have to talk about the continuing fallout from the horrific murder of 31-year-old right-wing activist and longtime Donald Trump ally Charlie Kirk during a largely attended outdoor speaking event at Utah Valley University on Wednesday, just before airtime on this program yesterday, as we scrambled at the time to cover the breaking news. Kirk, ironically, had been talking about and downplaying gun violence when a single shot rang out, sending Kirk to the hospital in critical condition before he was soon thereafter pronounced to have been killed. A manhunt continues as we go to air today for the gunman who assassinated him after two different men were initially announced as having been detained in connection with the shooting before each was subsequently released shortly thereafter on Thursday, despite the buffoonish social media announcements from Trump's FBI director, Kash Patel, thanking local and federal authorities for a job well done after each of the original suspects was initially taken into custody and before they were then released. On Thursday, the FBI released two photos of a person of interest. The shooter, we have learned since yesterday, fired a single shot from a distant roof nearly 200 yards from where Kirk was speaking. That's almost two football fields away, suggesting that he may have been a trained sharpshooter of some sort, but certainly skilled with using this kind of weapon and planning the event in advance. The man remains at large. The man or woman, I guess, remains at large and unidentified as we go to air today. More than 24 hours into the investigation, the two photos released by the FBI were of a man. The release of photos of this person in a hat, sunglasses, and a long-sleeve black shirt, as well as a $1,000 reward for information leading to an arrest, reflects law enforcement's urgent appeal for public help in locating the shooter at this point, who vanished after reportedly jumping off the roof and fleeing through a wooded area near the Utah University where Kirk was killed in a clearly targeted attack. Investigators were sifting through potential clues, including a palm print and a shoe impression found near the scene, as well as a Mauser 30 caliber bolt action rifle hidden in a towel in a wooded area near the university campus, along with what they suspect to be the path that the shooter took while fleeing from the incident. Beside the spent cartridge recovered in the chamber, three other rounds were loaded in the magazine, according to information circulated among law enforcement and described to the Associated Press today. The weapon and ammunition are being forensically analyzed by law enforcement at a federal lab for clues that could help identify the shooter or the motive. So at this time, there is no known motive, despite the atrocious commentary from many on the far right, including, yes, the President of the United States himself, which we'll get to in a moment. The new information suggested at least modest progress in an investigation into a killing that law enforcement was treating as the latest instance of political violence to convulse the United States across the ideological spectrum, as Utah's Republican Governor Spencer Cox noted in his remarks just after the shooting on Wednesday afternoon, aptly describing a broken nation.
This is a dark day for our state. It's a tragic day for our nation. And I want to be very clear that this is a political assassination. Our nation is broken. We've had political assassinations recently in Minnesota. We had an attempted assassination on the governor of Pennsylvania. And we had an attempted assassination on a presidential candidate and former president of the United States. If anyone in the sound of my voice celebrated even a little bit at the news of this shooting, I would beg you to look in the mirror and to see if you can find a better angel in there somewhere. I don't care what his politics are. I care that he was an American. We desperately need our country. We desperately need leaders in our country. But more than the leaders, we just need every single person in this country to think about where we are and where we want to be.
Governor Spencer Cox of Utah on Wednesday. The shooting drew swift bipartisan condemnation as Democratic officials joined Republican allies of Kirk in decrying the violence. Quote, "The murder of Charlie Kirk breaks my heart," said Gabrielle Giffords, the former Democratic congresswoman who was critically wounded in a 2011 shooting in her Arizona district at the time. She said, "My deepest sympathies are with his wife, two young children, and friends." Kamala Harris said that, quote, "Political violence has no place in America." Republican Senate Majority Leader John Thune said, quote, "There is no place in our country for political violence, period, full stop," he said. That was the tone from the majority, I think, of elected officials and others with a public presence in American politics. But some, especially on the far right, quickly departed from that, appearing to view the tragedy as a potential catalyst for a retribution campaign. Enrique Tarrio, the leader of the Proud Boys, suggested as much by boosting a post from right-wing influencer Andrew Tate calling for, quote, "drastic action." Quote, "American society is collapsing," Tate wrote in all caps in the tweet reposted by Tarrio. "Drastic action required now," he said. Others with more influence in the mainstream of the right immediately blamed Kirk's murder on their political opponents. Quote, "The left is the party of murder. The left is the party of murder," tweeted Elon Musk. "The left is the party of murder," said the man with more Twitter followers and more money, by the way, than anyone else on earth. Far-right activist Christopher Rufo and former Republican Senate candidate Blake Masters suggested that the shooting should prompt a law enforcement crackdown on the left, with Rufo saying that it was time to, quote, "infiltrate, disrupt, arrest, and incarcerate all of those who are responsible for this chaos." Masters wrote, quote, "left-wing violence is out of control, and it's not random," before saying that the NGO donor, non-governmental organization donor patronage network that supposedly supports the opposition must be destroyed. All of that, though, even the wave of various right-wing threats of retaliation, seemed to pale next to the President of the United States making a televised address from the Oval Office attacking the, quote, "radical left," and suggesting that he would use the power of the federal government, the power of the federal government, to go after his political foes as payback for Kirk's death.
"It's long past time for all Americans and the media to confront the fact that violence and murder are the tragic consequence of demonizing those with whom you disagree day after day, year after year, in the most hateful and despicable way possible. For years, those on the radical left have compared wonderful Americans like Charlie to Nazis and the world's worst mass murderers and criminals. This kind of rhetoric is directly responsible for the terrorism that we're seeing in our country today, and it must stop right now. My administration will find each and every one of those who contributed to this atrocity and to other political violence, including the organizations that fund it and support it, as well as those who go after our judges, law enforcement officials, and everyone else who brings order to our country."
Yeah. Demonizing those with whom you disagree year after year, it's a terrible thing, right, Donald Trump? Can't think of anyone who demonizes those with whom they disagree. Can you? So got that? The radical left is responsible for political violence because of their speech against our judges and law enforcement officials. Never mind that it is Trump who has long been attacking our judges on social media to the point where U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts had to issue a rare public rebuke in response to Trump's attacks on, yes, judges whose rulings Trump did not like earlier this year. And by the way, as we're sort of playing catch up today, let me just note, Trump's remarks from the Oval Office were pre-recorded. They were not live. Did you notice that?
I did not.
Yeah, they were not live, as we would usually expect, for some reason. And that instead of his well-recognized hand gestures, his gesticulation, he stayed mostly still during these remarks with his left hand covering the back of his right hand. For some reason, the one that's been seen so grotesquely bruised in recent weeks. Just sort of an interesting sidebar there. But as to his remarks, well, he mentioned judges and law enforcement officials. Notice he didn't say anything about the threats and political violence against elected politicians, did he? Where was his Oval Office address, pre-recorded or otherwise, this past June, less than just 3 months ago after the political assassination of the Democratic Speaker of the House in Minnesota, Melissa Hortman, and her husband, by a far-right MAGA guy inside their home in the middle of the night? Or the shooting of Minnesota Democratic State Senator John Hoffman and his wife by the same guy on the same night? Trump barely responded with an eventual note on his failing social media site, decrying, quote, horrific violence at the time, but he didn't even bother to mention Melissa Hortman or John Hoffman by name. Did Trump order American flags to be lowered for them, as he did for Charlie Kirk within hours of the shooting? Did he threaten to go after the groups that fund and support MAGA and other Trump-supporting terrorists? Did he even bother to call the governor of Minnesota, Tim Walz at the time, to offer help or condolences? Of course he did not. He did say when he was asked if he had called Governor Walz, quote, I could be nice and call him, but why waste time? Unquote. What the Democratic Governor Walz described at the time in Minnesota, just as Republican Governor Cox did in Utah on Wednesday, as a, quote, politically motivated assassination, well, that, when it happened in Minnesota, Republican U.S. Senator Mike Lee of Utah took to Twitter to joke about it, calling it at the time, quote, nightmare on Waltz Street. He even managed to misspell Governor Walz's name there, but hilarious, right? Because the guy, the killer, the shooter, the assassin, wore a mask when showing up to kill the Minnesota House Speaker and the Minnesota Senator, as seen in doorbell cam pictures. So nightmare on Waltz Street. Get it? Hilarious, isn't it? From a sitting U.S. senator. Instead of calling for their fellow right-wingers at the time to cool their rhetoric after those attacks, while Republicans now charge that describing Trump and MAGA as authoritarians is what's really to blame for Kirk's killing, the right claimed back then, instead, after Democrats were assassinated and shot elected officials, they claimed that, you know, Democratic Governor Walz had appointed or praised the assassin. He was a friend of the governor or something. It was nuts. But in right-wing world, the deaths, the assassinations, and the attempted assassinations of Democrats, well, apparently those don't count. Remember all the hilarious jokes made by folks on the right, including from elected officials and from Donald Trump's own son? Remember all the hilarious jokes after a man hunted down Nancy Pelosi, broke into her home in San Francisco, found her husband there instead, and bashed his skull in with a hammer? Do you remember that? Do you remember how hilarious that was? Of course it wasn't hilarious, but just after the assault, which sent Paul Pelosi to surgery in the hospital where he had to stay for weeks, Donald Trump Jr. posted a meme on social media showing a Halloween costume consisting of underwear and a hammer, captioned, quote, got my Paul Pelosi Halloween costume ready. Good stuff, huh? I guess his father, who condemned the entire left for an assassination by someone who remains at large and whose motive remains unknown. I guess he forgot to call his son, call for his son to be hunted down and held to account by his administration. In fact, Trump himself repeatedly joked about the attacks on Paul Pelosi at the California GOP convention in 2023. Trump mocked the break-in at Pelosi's house, quipping, quote, "How's her husband doing, by the way?" You got a whole bunch of laughter from the Republicans. From the Republicans at the convention here in California. He made similar jokes in 2024 and 2025, just this year, when he posted a fake AI-generated video mocking the attack on Pelosi and her husband. But now, oh, he's furious, is he? And of course, it's not only our lunatic authoritarian president who is now doing this from the Oval Office. The guy who is desperate to find something, anything, to distract from his economic disaster and his Epstein files problems. Well, maybe he's now found it. It should work as a fantastic distraction for him, at least for a while, as long as he can squeeze that assassination juice in a way that helps him politically. But it is, of course, by no means only him. Here's South Carolina's U.S. Congresswoman Nancy Mace on Wednesday, again, before the shooter has even been apprehended, before anybody had any idea who he or she was or wasn't, blaming the shooting on, of course, Democrats, and dodging a reporter's questions about, you know, the very recently shot and assassinated elected Democratic officials up in Minnesota who were killed by someone now known to be a far-right extremist.
I'm going to say this. Democrats own what happened today. I am devastated. My kids have called panicking. They probably, all the kids of every conservative in the country called panicking. Just because you speak your mind on an issue doesn't mean you get shot.
Then, by that logic, do Republicans own the shooting of the two Democratic lawmakers in Minnesota?
Political?
Isn't this on both sides?
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm asking.
We don't know
question.
What condition Charlie Kirk is in right now. Some raging leftist lunatic put a bullet through his neck, and you want to talk about Republicans right now? No.
No, I'm asking.
No, not
you,
at all.
You said the Democrats
no, this
have owned
is it too, on. But Democrats own this.
But isn't there a problem with political violence across the spectrum?
We're talking about Charlie Kirk right now. That's the subject of this that we're talking about right now. Democrats own this 100%.
It sounds like Nancy Mace got her little hot take ready and then hadn't really thought it through and didn't expect anyone to actually question her on the lack of logic in that.
And good for that reporter. I don't know who that was, but good for that reporter for pressing her on that same thing. And she had, no plans, hadn't thought that one through.
Yeah.
Democrats own this 100%. So contrast all of that and the lack of response from Republicans after the assassination of Democrats in Minnesota this summer and the jokes about both them and the attacks on Nancy Pelosi's husband. Contrast that with some of the reactions from Democrats as the news of Charlie Kirk's assassination broke on Wednesday. I shared California Governor Gavin Newsom's tweet right after the shooting was reported yesterday on the show when he wrote, quote, "The attack on Charlie Kirk is disgusting, vile, and reprehensible. In the United States of America, we must reject political violence in every form." Democratic U.S. Senator Ruben Gallego of Arizona described the shooting as horrific and asked readers on Twitter to hope that Charlie Kirk is well and keep him and his family in your prayers. Here's New Jersey's Democratic U.S. Senator Cory Booker just after the news broke that, in fact, Kirk had died.
So I heard that Charlie Kirk got shot, and now I hear that he's dead. My heart goes out to his family and his loved ones. But I think all Americans should be mourning right now because this is another attack on our country. It's a political assassination. And this is just another signpost that we are in crisis because political attacks, heinous, violent political rhetoric in our country is going up. This should not be viewed through a partisan lens. It should be viewed through a patriotic one. We all have a responsibility to deal with this growing crisis in our country of political violence. All of us have to take a hard look and do what's necessary to secure our democracy and end this scourge that seems to only be getting worse.
New Jersey Senator Cory Booker. He is, of course, correct. We all have to take a hard look at what is going on. And yes, it is, I'm afraid, getting worse. Here's Illinois' Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker when he was asked about the shooting and political violence by a reporter on Wednesday.
I will say that political violence, unfortunately, has been ratcheting up in this country. We saw the shootings, the killings in Minnesota. We've seen other political violence occur in other states. And I would just say it's got to stop. And I think there are people who are fomenting it in this country. I think the president's rhetoric often foments it. We've seen the January 6th rioters who clearly, you know, have tripped a new era of political violence. And the president, what did he do? He pardoned them. I mean, what kind of signal does that send to people who want to perpetrate political violence? Not a good one.
Thank you for raising that point, Governor Pritzker. The January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol included thousands of rioters who were incited by our then and now sitting president. They were incited. We know that they were incited by him because a bipartisan majority of the U.S. Senate voted after his second impeachment trial that, yes, in fact, he had done so. He was found guilty by a majority, a bipartisan majority of the U.S. Senate. That's our now sitting president who is pretending to condemn political violence against, yes, law enforcement officers, as he had the temerity to say. Hundreds of law enforcement officers were attacked on January 6th by his incited supporters. And then he pardoned more than 1,000 of them for doing so on his very first day in office after being sworn in for a second term, when he now says that his administration will, quote, find each and every one of those who contributed to political violence, as well as those who go after our judges and law enforcement officials. That, according to the president of the United States, is due to their rhetoric, which caused, he says, Wednesday's killing of Charlie Kirk. But a quick look at Donald Trump's supporters on Twitter yesterday, each with a huge number of followers, suggests that the rhetoric from the left describing Donald Trump as an authoritarian as the cause of political violence in the U.S. is, well, perhaps just a little bit misplaced. Desi, I know you've been looking through some of those tweets. I suspect you need a shower. But what did you find from the supporters of Donald Trump on the right in the wake of the shooting of Charlie Kirk?
Well, I think you will be surprised that they are not very calm.
What?
To start with. We've got, so for example, libs of TikTok just came straight out and said in all caps, "This is war." Joey Manarino, "The Democrat Party must be classified as a domestic terror organization and their members, leaders, treated accordingly." Another is Brian Eastwood, "I'm ready for civil war."
Civil war.
"You want to fight and you're going to get it." Oilfield Rando, an interesting name. Oilfield Rando, "I don't want the National Guard sent to Democrat cities anymore. I want the Air Force sent." Sean Davis, "When Democrats lose elections they couldn't steal, they murder the people they were unable to defeat." Gunther Eagleman, "They've declared war." No idea who they are, but they've declared war.
Aesthetica. Aesthetica writes, "There's no going back after this. The only way this ends is the complete annihilation of the Democrat Party."
Yeah.
Matt Forney, "It's time for a complete crackdown on the left. Every Democratic politician must be arrested and the party banned under RICO."
Patrick Casey,
"Yeah?
It's time to bring the hammer down on the left."
Oh, I get it.
Laura Loomer, It's time for the Trump administration to shut down, defund, and prosecute every single leftist organization. We must shut these lunatic leftists down one and for all. The left is a national security threat. And finally, Elon Musk. If they won't leave us in peace, then our choice is fight or die.
Elon Musk, the richest man, or now I guess the second richest man in the world. If they won't leave us in peace, then our choice is fight or die. The left, he said, is the party of murder. All of that without even bothering to play some of Charlie Kirk's own comments over the years, at least for today, out of respect for the dead. As our friend Heather Digby Parton wrote at her Hullabaloo blog yesterday, as these posts were coming in from Trump supporters, she said, quote, "Nobody knew who shot Charlie Kirk when those were written. Nobody knows as I write this now. But as you can see, they aren't waiting to find out to gin up retribution against the left." As to what the left was writing at the same time on Wednesday afternoon and evening, here's Josh Marshall at TPM. He writes, "I don't have much to share on the death of Charlie Kirk beyond what I suspect is obvious. We want a society where political participation and activism, even things we disagree with or find despicable, can take place without the threat of violence. This isn't just a general belief that we don't want people to be hurt or die by violence. It's the basis of the society and political order we want to live in, and which at this very moment is under a graver threat than at any time in our lifetimes. Right-wing violence, both of an organized paramilitary sort and by radicalized loners, has become such a scourge in recent years that on the extremes you hear voices for things like armed versions of Antifa and the like as some sort of counter. My point," he writes, "is not to equate the two. It is to note that when elections and speech and nonviolent political activism give way to paramilitary and political violence, the forces of civic democracy have already mostly lost the battle. Fascists do civil violence better than civic Democrats. It's a foundational element of their political philosophy. It's the verdict of logic and history. I also know the impact of the sudden death of a young parent from personal experience. In fact, Josh lost his mother in a car accident when he was very young. I think he was 11 or so, as I recall at the time. He says, totally devastating for children and certainly for a spouse. People should be free of this worry and this reality, whatever you think of them, whatever their politics. I am genuinely and acutely sorry for his family's loss," he writes. "There's a good chance that we'll know much more about what happened, who did it, and at least generally why in the coming hours," he says. "But for now, we know next to nothing. And this isn't just a throwaway line, something akin to a reminder that people are innocent until proven guilty and all of that. The one thing we know about this shooter, or at least the one thing that has been reliably reported from the university, is that the shooter struck Kirk with a fatal shot to the neck from a building 200 yards away. That is a carefully planned assassination and the work of someone who is at least experienced with a long gun and a scope. You don't have to be the world's best marksman to do that," he notes, "but you need some real experience. The fact that the shooter wasn't rapidly apprehended in the face of what must be a massive manhunt also suggests real planning. Whether these facts will end up being critical to the overall story, we don't know, but they may be. For the reasons I stated above, and which you certainly don't need me to tell you, he writes, "we must stand resolutely against political assassination and political violence of all sorts. We must stand equally resolute against everyone who tries to exploit acts of political violence as the pretext for repression of their political foes." Josh says, "we're already seeing Twitter and other social media venues of the right overflowing with demands for that. It is not only wise politically, but right and essential on the merits to condemn this egregious act, whoever turns out to have been behind it. There is no logic in giving an inch or any quarter to those who are trying to make this into a Reichstag moment for Donald Trump's ongoing campaign of repression." That's Josh Marshall, a Talking Points memo on Wednesday evening, and I agree. We will finish for now in hopes of taking something positive away from all of this, maybe, as we move forward, with Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren's response to the media outside the Capitol in D.C. on Wednesday after the shooting in Utah and the after the high school shooting near Denver at right around the same time. You may or may not have heard about it. It received much less coverage, though we covered it on this program yesterday. Elizabeth Warren on cooling down the rhetoric on, quote, both sides and what Republicans in Congress could do if they were actually really concerned about political violence, as they now pretend.
Violence is never the answer. This is just wrong. And my heart goes out to his family, to his friends. But we just cannot be a country that turns to violence when we disagree with people. We just can't.
What can Congress do about it, Senator?
Well, one thing Congress can do is gun safety. And every time there's a killing, the Republicans say this is not the time to talk about gun safety. And yet we have to. As a nation, we have more gun deaths than most other nations, and we don't keep our children, our friends, our neighbors safe by just putting ordinary gun safety rules in place. You know, I just want to say this coming from Massachusetts. If the rest of the country would just follow the rules we follow in Massachusetts, we could reduce fatalities all over this country. And plenty of people who are hunters and who use guns for sport still have lots of activities in Massachusetts. But at least we make it a little tougher to use guns for harming other human beings.
What do you say to people who are saying the Democrats need to lower the temperatures?
Oh, please. Right. Why don't you start with the President of the United States? Right? And every ugly meme he has posted and every ugly word. He is the leader of this nation. And I think that when he's posting things like he did just a couple of days ago, trying to show an entire city on fire and a reference to helicopters, in effect, throwing people out of helicopters and showing himself as some kind of big chest beating a threat, then I just don't want to hear this from the Republicans.
Do you think politicians on both sides have a role to play here, though, in trying to turn the rhetoric down?
Yeah, I think what we have to say is, A, violence is not the answer, and we are willing to take steps so that violence in this country is not so lethal. Do we have a single Republican who will stand up and join us following the school shooting out in Denver at the same time? School shootings happen every single day. They have become commonplace in this country. It's hard now to actually get attention when someone has been mowed down with a gun, and Congress could change that and should change that.
I just asked Senator Cassidy that same question before you, and he said Congress can't change the heart of a man.
You can change whether or not they have a lethal weapon in their hands, and the likelihood that they will be able to kill another person or to kill themselves goes up if they have a lethal weapon. Those are the facts. And Republicans want to turn their backs on that because it is more politically expedient. But they are not making anybody safer.
A lot of people are saying that political violence has no place in our country, but it clearly does have some place in our country.
It's a fact of life now.
Is it just a fact of life now?
I don't want it to be a fact of life, and that's what we have to keep saying. We have to keep saying no violence, but we also need to back it up with actions. And backing it up with actions means just taking some modest steps for gun safety. And remember here, most of America agrees with us on modest steps on gun safety, on things like background checks. This is what America wants to do to protect our children. And yet, the Republican Party, just as they bend a knee to Donald Trump, bends a knee to a gun industry that continues to make money by stirring everyone up and making sure that everyone has access to every possible lethal weapon. And That puts all of us at risk. It puts our children at risk. It puts leaders at risk. And that's a real mistake for our country.
Senator Warren, do you feel safe given all this violence?
How can anybody feel safe today? I worry when I send my grandchildren off to school. Who doesn't? If you're alive and breathing in the United States right now, you understand that the risks have simply escalated. And the United States Congress could act, and so far simply refuses.
Thank you.
Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat of Massachusetts, outside the U.S. Capitol, following the killing of 31-year-old Republican activist Charlie Kirk in Utah on Wednesday. This story, I suspect, will continue. For now, let's take a quick break, and we are back with, something, Trump and stolen valor, plus Desi Doyen and the Green News Report right here on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Yeah, we're getting on the peace train here at the broadcast. Welcome back to it. I'm Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. President Donald Trump is stealing credit for infrastructure improvements that were achieved under Biden-era legislation that he actively sought to sabotage.
Of course.
The New York Times reports that signs emblazoned with the words, in all caps, President Donald J. Trump and Rebuilding America's Infrastructure are now popping up across the country at improvement projects financed by the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which passed, yes, during the Biden administration, and yes, against Trump's best efforts back in 2021. As Trump was seeking to derail the legislation, he called it a, quote, loser for the country. Well, who's the loser for the country now, Donnie boy? Quote, Joe Biden's infrastructure bill is a disgrace, he said in August 2021 before a Senate vote on the bill at the time, warning that Republican lawmakers who supported it would be committing political suicide. After it passed Congress, Trump referred to it as, quote, terrible Democrat socialist infrastructure plan. Well, what do you know? Now Trump seems delighted to claim Biden's Democrat socialist infrastructure plan as his own. Now Trump appears to be happy to claim that whatever Biden achieved was actually his own achievement. The only indication on the signs pointing to the truth is apparently tiny little text noting that the project was, quote, funded by the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. An Amtrak spokesperson told the New York Times that the signs currently appear at sites in Connecticut, Maryland, Boston, Philadelphia, as well as on Baltimore to Washington, D.C. Amtrak routes as part of, quote, voluntary Amtrak initiatives to update signage, quote, following the change in presidential administrations earlier this year. Sure, it was voluntary. I bet it was. When Biden's bill passed, notes Robert McCoy over at the New Republic, the then president claimed credit for its achievements with signs bearing the words project funded by President Joe Biden's bipartisan infrastructure law. But Republicans were outraged at the time, and now they are curiously quiet about the new signs. According to the New York Times, Senator Ted Cruz, who accused Biden of running afoul of the Hatch Act with those signs, quote, did not respond to an email asking whether the Trump signs must also violate the Hatch Act. Numerous Republicans who voted against the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act have since its passage taken credit for its results. For example, our good friend Representative Nancy Mace, despite voting no on the bill, which she called a, quote, socialist wish list, well, she has since falsely said that she, quote, helped secure the largest infrastructure grant in South Carolina history.
I mean, what a liar.
By helped to secure, apparently she means voted against and tried to prevent, but whatever. Similarly, when the Trump administration took over Union Station last month, MTV Road Rules star turned Trump's transportation secretary, Sean Duffy, touted rail improvements made possible by Biden's legislation as part of Trump's effort to, quote, make travel great again.
This is beautiful. It's brand new. It's going to be a way different traveling experience for those who want to take the Acela, usually between D.C. and New York, but also up to Boston. Mm-hmm. Again, we're gonna have more trains. Five are rolling out right now. In the next year, we're going to roll out 28, replacing the 15 old trains. And we're going to have better pricing for consumers, but also better profit for Amtrak. We want to make sure federal dollars have to stop going to Amtrak. They can be self-sustainable.
Right.
And these trains are part of that. And again, a lot of people don't want to take the old Acela because it was just, it was showing its age.
Yeah.
This is beautiful. This is new. And we're going to make Union Station safer as well. The experience top to bottom is going to be way better and way safer.
What do you mean, we, white man, Sean Duffy and Donald Trump taking credit for Joe Biden's work? In related news, let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
You don't know when the wind's going to blow. We do know when the sun's going to shine, and it's not 24 hours a day.
Trump administration is taking its war on wind and solar on the road. Deforestation, a major driver behind the decline of rainfall in the Amazon rainforest. Plus, August 2025 was the third hottest August ever recorded.
So it's getting cooler.
No.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from BrandBlog.com. I'm Brand Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We have natural gas, coal, nuclear, and hydro. That's how we powered our grid for 100 years.
And for 100 years before that, we used whale blubber to light our lanterns. You jackass. You're the energy secretary? Really? Read a book. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I hate not to give him full credit. That was Energy Secretary Chris Wright, formerly or perhaps currently still the CEO of a fracking company, who wants us to keep fracking for hundreds of more years, apparently.
Surprise!
What do you got for us today?
Well, first up, August 2025 was the third hottest August ever recorded globally since record-keeping began in the mid-1800s. That's according to Europe's climate service, Copernicus. August 2024 remains the hottest August on record. 2025 is now likely to clock in as the second or third hottest year in recorded history.
Fantastic.
It's September, and wildfires are still burning ferociously across the western U.S. and Canada, fueled by extreme heat, dryness, and lightning strikes. In California, fire crews are racing to save a treasured grove of ancient giant sequoias, some 2,000 years old, outside of Sequoia National Park, as the lightning-sparked Garnet Fire pushes deeper into the Sierra National Forest. Mm. In slightly better news for federal wildland firefighters, the U.S. Forest Service this week reversed its longtime ban on firefighters wearing masks.
What?
And they will provide crews with protective N95 masks as they battle increasingly intense fires across the nation. The agency previously banned masks over concerns of the risk of heat exhaustion, but reversed it after a series of reports by the New York Times showing wildfire smoke is harming firefighters, causing lung damage and smoke-related diseases.
We needed a New York Times report to tell us that?
Apparently. In Brazil, deforestation is a major driver of the decline of rainfall in the Amazon rainforest. A new study in the journal Nature Communications found that large-scale logging and burning in the forest is responsible for 75% of the decrease in rainfall across the Amazon basin. The study found that tree loss is also partially responsible for higher temperatures across the Amazon. The Amazon used to absorb a significant chunk of humanity's carbon dioxide emissions, but parts of the region have become net producers of greenhouse gases.
So we're just doing ourselves in everywhere.
In related news, Donald Trump is now trying to bully other countries to reverse their own investments in cheap, clean, renewable energy using tariffs, levies, and other mechanisms in an attempt to strong-arm them to buy more costly, polluting U.S. oil, gas, and coal. Here is Trump in a recent cabinet meeting.
So I'm trying to have people learn about wind real fast, and I think I've done a good job, but not good enough, because some countries are still trying, and they're destroying themselves. Those are countries that are really destroying themselves. I hope they get back to fossil fuel.
This week, the Trump administration took its war on wind and solar energy on the road. U.S. Secretary of Energy Chris Wright, a former oil and gas executive who Brad so lovingly cited at the top of this report, traveled to Europe to lobby for more fossil fuels, while also spreading disinformation about climate science and renewable energy, calling it all, quote, climate ideology. Wright is pushing the EU to loosen its environmental rules, like requiring oil and gas companies to fix their leaks of climate warming methane and prevent environmental damage.
Well, in this case, right is wrong.
But the growth of renewables seems unstoppable. Globally, solar and wind energy are now the cheapest and fastest growing power sources in human history, with more clean energy coming online every year. And even as the Trump administration guts support for renewable energy here, the world is still pushing ahead. In Japan, burning fossil fuels for electricity hit a new record low this year, thanks to a surge in deployment of renewable energy. Solar is also taking off across Africa. According to a new report by data firm Ember, countries across Africa have surged their imports of Chinese-made solar panels, with imports up 60% over just the last year, a new record.
So it's China who's kicking our butt with those imports, eh?
Yep.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we didn't have the heart to get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Thank you very much, our producer, Desi Doyen.
Yep.
And thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other at any time, you can download them all for free at bradblog.com. Thanks to those of you who hit a donate button while you're there to pretty please help us stay on your public airwaves. You can go straight to bradblog.com/donate if you'd like to do that. Hey, please sign up for a monthly donation of any amount you can afford. It's all automated, one and done, but it really, really helps us to continue our work. So thank you in advance. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the social medias, especially Blue Sky, I am the Brad Blog. Please find me there and follow. Desi Doyen can be found at
Green News Report.
We will see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.